Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is July the 8th, 2017. My special guest is Denny Bonet. Then you can contact Denny on her website, dennybonet.com. It's D-E-N-I-B-O-N-E-T. Purchase her records, her albums, learn all about her, get to know her. Denny, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, John. How are you?
I'm good. I think I was rambling along there a little bit, but it's really good to have you on, and I really appreciate you taking
me on. I like it when you ramble in my favor. That's good.
I do. I do a lot of that. It's no. We'll see at the end of the show what you think. But I really do appreciate you coming on. I just think your music is amazing. I just want more people to know about it. And you know, we do have. We've been doing this since 2008, and have a pretty nice little group of people that follow us, and I really appreciate everybody that supports independent musicians, and I really think your music is incredible. Denny's latest album.
Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. And her latest album is Bright Shiny Objects, and we played the title song from that. Why don't we start off with something that I forget to do a lot, Denny, and that's to talk about what's going on with you right now as far as projects and what things are going on in your career right now that you would like people to know about in the summer of 2017. And anything going on as far as touring or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been a very interesting year. You know, this right now I am so involved in, shameless self-promotion, we like to say, you know, trying to promote the album. And I just got back from a really, really intense month of touring in Europe. And, you know, I've toured with a lot of different people, so, I've been to Europe many, many times, you know, but this is the first time I've actually toured my own music, other than the time when I lived there. I lived in England for a little while in the mid-90s, and, you know, I kind of don't count that because I was trying to start from scratch. Let's not count that. That wasn't this kind of touring. But this was intense. I mean, I did, like, about 26, 27 shows in a month, in 30 days.
Wow.
I didn't have a lot of time off. And started in the UK and did some shows in the UK and then went to Ireland, where I played for a little over a week in Ireland with a break in the middle of that week, got on a plane and went to Liverpool and played the Cavern Club.
Oh, you got to be kidding. That's awesome.
No, it was awesome. I actually posted on Facebook. I have my own version of Please Please Me, and I do sing. For those people who only think I play the violin, I do sing and have, you know, several albums out of singer songwriter fun up tempo stuff. But my new album's all instrumental, and so my live shows, I'm still doing a mix of everything. It's not just the instrumental stuff.
Okay.
Let's see. I left the UK. Then I went back to Ireland, and then went to Belgium and Holland for 2 weeks. And it was just great. It went so well that I've been invited back in September. So I'm going back in September to do it again. One more time.
Awesome.
One more round. It's awesome. And so the other thing that has been going on this summer is that since this last record is instrumental, we have been working on orchestrating several of the songs off of the record for full orchestra.
Mm.
And I'm in talks right now with a couple of orchestras, and I don't want to jinx it, but it's very exciting.
Wow.
And the last track that we just had orchestrated is off of this new record, is Frankenstein, the Edgar Winter tune, my big cover on the album. And that was orchestrated by Steve Bartek, who was in Oingo Boingo, and he does all the orchestrations for Danny Elfman and like all the Tim Burton movies and whatnot. So he orchestrated it, and it's fantastic. I'm so excited. I can't wait to play.
Oh, that's
got to
be awesome. Yeah,
it's gonna be awesome. So
yeah, that sounds cool. The thing I want to talk to you about when you play in Europe, and you know what's the difference in the average music lover, Denny, that you know that you like you were in Ireland and England and Belgium and places like that. Are they pretty much the same as the U.S. music lovers, the people that appreciate your music, or is there a difference there?
It's hard to say, you know, because I think the venues that that I was playing while I was there were kind of unusual. They were real listening rooms, and you know, and here, you know, I live in New York, so a lot of times, you know, in New York, you know, like I played the day before, what kicked off the whole tour, I played in Rockwood, Music Hall Stage 2. And, you know, we got a, had a great show. It was fabulous. You know, so, yeah, you want to compare it. It was, you know, people listened. It was great. And I think what's different there, though, is that since I'm coming at it from an artist that they don't might not necessarily know, and it's a listening room, it's different for them, I think. You know, what I do is different than what most people would do, you know, in a listening room. You know, I'm pretty up-tempo. I'm not your typical moody singer-songwriter, you know, that is just playing a guitar. And not to say there's anything wrong with a moody singer-songwriter playing guitar. I am not dissing that in the slightest. I love music, period, you know. But that's not what I do. And, you know, I even if I'm in a situation where most people would be sitting down, I can't. I've got to jump up and play, you know. So I've done songwriters in the round where everyone's sort of sitting there, and I'm like, can I get up, please? Because I really prefer to move when I'm playing. It was great. I mean, I definitely think as we got out, the audiences in the UK, or at least like in London, were similar to the audiences, you know, in New York. You know, you got to prove yourself. You just got to. You can't look who you're competing against, you know. But I did a show in Ireland in it was called Leap Castle, L-E-A-P. They pronounce it Leap, but we would call it Leap, but it's Leap. And it's the most haunted castle in Ireland. And it's fantastic. I actually did that gig. I was on tour a few years ago with, Rachel Yamagata and a guy named Ed Romanoff, who's a fabulous singer-songwriter. And they both were touring together, and I played with both of them. You know, backing them. I was in their backing group. The group was only a few of us, but a backing small group. But we played that gig, you know, in the castle, and I want to come back and do it on my own, you know. And when I came on this tour, I spoke with the promoter, and he was like, "Yes, we'd love to have you back." So it was fantastic because late at night. After it was sold out and it worked out, you know, I mean, it was great, you know, the show was fantastic.
Right.
And, I kind of felt like one of those nights, every now and then you do a show, it's like, I can do no wrong, you know, and I can say nothing wrong and everybody's laughing. It's good. Or laughing and crying and enjoying. And, hopefully they weren't crying. Because I'm not playing the moody singer song. But anyway, we're sitting there, and after the concert's over, they kind of cleared the castle. And you got to look it up. It's fantastic. Just do a search for, you know, Leap Castle, and you'll see that they cleared the place and brought out this big table, and there was about eight of us afterward. And this is 11:30 at night or so, and they bring out this huge vat of Irish stew and bottles of wine and grog and glug, and I felt like I was sitting in, you know, seriously, it was like a scene out of Game of Thrones. I was definitely living Game of Thrones that night. And then the guy Sean, I can't remember his last name, the guy who owns the castle is like a world-class penny whistle player, and he entertained us a little bit.
Oh,
and
wow.
You know, it was like by candlelight. It was great, you know. But it was, you know, it was things like that on the tour that, you know, we played Whelan's in Dublin, and then played a couple of little festivals in Belgium. And, you know, I'm playing, going to go back and play a couple of art centers. Going to be in Wexford and Dingle, and but I don't know, places. I'll be on tour. It'll be great.
Yeah, that just sounds magical. Now, one question I ask composers and songwriters and is about when they compose and when they write music. Everybody's different, and everyone I ask the question to gives me a different answer. But does geography mean anything to you, Denny, when you're writing music and in composing, like being in a castle or being in Liverpool, where the cavern where the Beatles were, or being in Belgium? Does that, like the spirit of the place or the aura of the place, have an effect on you to where you may write something different in a certain geography than you would in another place?
You know, I wish I could give you the most brilliant answer and say, oh, yes, John, I wrote myself an Irish, da-da-da. You know, I don't. I can't say that it does, because when I'm on tour like that, I'm not really writing, you know. I was so tired. Exhausted, you know. I have to tell you, I'm a traveler. I love to travel. I mean, that's what I do. You know, my life is, you know, all about planning the next trip. And you know, I've definitely got the travel bug. And I can't say that I actually sit down. It's because I'm not, you know, I don't play guitar and sit down and like, I'm going to strum a guitar now and write this song on the napkin in the Winnebago on my way to the gig. That's not when I write. You know, I kind of write when I'm sitting down in front of my computer, or, you know, with an instrument under my chin in a certain place with the mind that I'm going to write something. You know, even I wish I could say, you know, I've been to Hawaii a few times. Oh, I picked up the uke and wrote this brilliant little ditty. I don't write like that. So I guess I'm letting you down on that particular question.
I have to ask.
Who knows?
Questions.
You know, maybe now I'll think about it, and you know, it's harder. You know, I've been around so many amazing musicians who will, you know, can't be without their instrument, you know, in their hands. And I always do bring a violin with me. I always do, because I now have this I have this travel violin. It's really cute, and it's kind of fiberglass, and you can, you know, I mean, if I'm not on tour, if I'm just on, you know, on a trip, so you know, I'll sit there and, you know, watch the sunset and just sort of jam and whatnot. But and that's not to say, you know, I'm not playing something from my heart, but I don't think I've ever, in that kind of situation, you know, set up a tape recorder while I'm sitting on the rocks looking at the ocean and playing. So, maybe something really brilliant went by and we don't know it.
No, I was just wondering, because, you know, I've talked to people that, you know, I love talking to people that are, you know, I think creating is the coolest thing, period, ever. And that's why, you know, I love talking to artists and interviewing artists. And I think it's so important. And it's so important for young kids to learn how to create and learn how to play instruments and learn music and learn art and learn that magic. And, you know, I've talked to people that have been in, you know, slumps, and when they can't write anything, Denny, and they go to like a certain place, and that's where people have told me that there's like, and I don't know if this is true because it's never, you know, I don't have that talent, but that certain places speak to them and certain.
Well, you know, I find that when I am in that position, when I'm in a kind of either in a slump or, you know, I'm like, oh, I got to write something. Thankfully, we have so many great technological advances that are right in front of us, you know, even if all you have is GarageBand, you know, and right now, you know, I personally, you know, am quite good at recording and recording myself. So, you know, what I do in that situation is that I find myself a cool loop or something and start playing against it. And
right.
then I find my inspiration by, you know, as opposed to finding my inspiration from silence, I'm finding it from something that's going to jar me somewhere.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Now, has that always been the case? Do you remember, like, when you were very, very early in your career where you were writing music, was it, how did that work then? Because I know that there are people I've had people tell me that the entire songs, the entire compositions just appear to them, and they have them.
Yeah, no,
and
it still does sometimes. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that sometimes, you know, I live in New York, you know, there's a lot of inspiration here, you know, as far as, you know, just maybe hearing something in a background, you know, hearing walking down the street and hearing someone playing some kind of Latin beat or something, you know, on a,
yep,
coming out of a boombox. But, you know, in that case, that's the great thing that we all have, where we all carry around cell phones that have memos on them that you can sing ideas into, you know,
right.
And that's something I didn't used to have, you know. I mean, I'm saying that, you know, I didn't always have a cell phone. I didn't, you know, I mean, there was a period of time there in my youth when, you know, I had to carry around a tiny little tape recorder to do that sort of thing.
Right.
But I'm still feeling bad about letting you down on that travel question.
I'll make you a deal.
I am going on a safari in January. I'm going to write you a song, John.
That sounds awesome.
A song from Tanzania. I'm going to be sitting on a beach in Zanzibar, and I'm going to write you a song. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds awesome. But you have to concentrate, Danny, because you don't want, you know, any animals attacking you. So
exactly. Well, I won't be singing too close to the to the windshield
wildlife
or anything like that.
Well, my guest is Danny Bonet, and you can go on her website, denibonet.com. Her latest album is Bright Shiny Objects. We started off the show with that. Would you like to talk a little bit, Danny, about this album and the making of it? I know it's an instrumental. How was it when you approached this album, this project? Was it different from other ones? How did you do this? And when you go into a new project, how does that work? Because I know some people are thinking, okay, this is what I want to do. This is exactly what I want to do. I've got this idea. Some people go into it more organically, where it kind of comes together as it's you're working on it. How was this, the making of this album? How did it start off, and how did you approach the whole creative part of this?
That's a really good question. Really good question. This, like I'd said, my previous albums were singer-songwriter albums where, you know, I wrote songs that had verse and a chorus, you know, and I sing. I'm a singer. It's what I do. But I'm also known as a violinist, an electric violinist, and, you know, I've played with lots of people and toured with lots of people and backed up some pretty remarkable musicians. I've been really, really lucky, you know. We can name drop from now until kingdom come, and which I'm happy to do if you want me to. But,
yeah.
But
oh, sure.
But
yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I was in Cyndi Lauper's band for a couple of years, and I've toured with Robin Hitchcock, and played with REM and Sarah McLachlan, and lots and lots and lots of people. But, you know, I also
That's
would sing
some good
backup,
names,
you know.
Yes.
There's
yep.
some good names there, you know, and I played on Mountain Stage on public radio for quite a few years, and that gig was remarkable because I got to play with people like Warren Zevon, and, you know, the list of people that I played with on that show was crazy, you know, it was amazing. But, you know, so this record, but, you know, even though I did that sort of thing with everybody else when I'd go in the studio and play with them, you know, I would record, you know, full orchestra tracks, you know, just layers one after another. And that's what I do. You know, I do a lot of that for other people, too. And, you know, now here in my studio, I have a studio here in New York, my own studio, and which I can plug now, right? That's okay. Overdubstrings.com.
Cool.
I'm very reasonable. Overdubstrings.com. And, you know, and I do a lot of that. I just finished doing a track for a great songwriter, Neil Connolly, who asked me to do some strings for his upcoming new album. And just finished that this morning, and that was fun. And I laid down a little orchestra for him. And he didn't actually ask for the orchestra, but I couldn't help myself. Right here. But anyway, so back to your question. After having done the last record, which the album before this was called It's All Good, and it was a record that was the first and only album that I didn't do with my producer, who's a guy named Paul Bevan, who is remarkable. He just actually won an Emmy last year for doing sound for Danny Elfman. That was my connection.
Wow.
But anyhow, so I did that, the last record, with Richard Barone from a group called the Bongos. And Richard and I sat down and with the idea that we were going to basically write the happiest damn album we could write. You know, let's just write something happy, because we were both kind of in places in our lives that we kind of needed cheering up. So we just said, let's write something fun. So we wrote this album, and, you know, we brought in, between us, we know a lot of really amazing players, and we brought in some great people. And we even brought in Fred Schneider, the B-52s, is on one track. And Peter Buck is on one track of that last record. And but then I started thinking, this was really the first time I'd ever done this. I started thinking, maybe I want to push myself as an instrumentalist, as a violinist, and play in a way that would force me to really push myself as a player, you know,
okay.
And not just play the lowest common denominator, but to play something that I really had to reach for to learn how to play, and, you know, like actually practice to learn how to play it, because, you know, I don't know how many people out there do what I do, but, you know, it's like sometimes you just, it's not that you get lazy, you just play what you know what you could do. So this album was different, that I contacted some people, songwriter friends of mine that I'd either written with before, that I wanted to write with, and you know, a lot of the stuff on the album is co-writes with people that basically would kick me in the butt. That was the idea. You know, I wanted to be challenged. And so, you know, I think the album is a little more challenging. You know, it's not just, you know, here's a song. You know, it goes somewhere.
Yeah.
And but the players on this record are astronomical. You know, I got... I was working with Paul Bevan, and then we got Robert L. Smith, who, you know, he's also he's got Grammys, and he's really amazing engineer. So I had a great team on this one. And we went in the studio like 3 or 4 different times with different groups of people, and we would do rehearsal first. And basically, you don't bring in the best players in the world and insist you must play. You know, I mean, if you have something that you really wanted to play, you go, here, try this. But I brought in, like, the first group that I brought in was Sean Pelton from Saturday Night Live on drums, Will Lee from Letterman on bass, and we had, let's see, Matt Beck, who plays in Matchbox 20. We had, I mean, some of the players on this record were crazy. It was so good. And, you know, we would do our rehearsals. Oh, we had Graham Mabey, plays with Joe Jackson. We had Liberty DeVito, plays with Billy Joel's drummer.
Yep.
Steve Holly. I have some of the best drummers in the world on this record. Steve Holly, who was in with Paul McCartney and Wings. Yeah, gosh, I can't even remember half the video. It's so good. But these are, you know, these are all friends, and I just basically, you know, got them in there. And so we created at least the basic tracks in these different groups, and then some of the overdubs afterward. You know, if we were missing something, we would get them in, you know. But in general, a lot of the stuff was created in those sessions as a group. So it kind of, some of it kind of, I think, has a little bit more of a band feel, as opposed to just, you know, layering everything from top to bottom with overdubs. A lot of the strings that I did, I would do afterward, and, you know, bring in my own personal orchestra, me, and layer some of the stuff there. But a lot of the leads I did, you know, in the studio when we were there. So that was, the whole process was very different for me. And, you know, when I went to go do my CD release, it was like, oh my God, now I got to really, really learn this, how to play it live. It's different.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think people think about that sometimes. And I think it's an interesting thing to talk about, because when you're creating the music and with these amazing musicians, Denny, in the studio, and you're working and you're getting it to a point where you're thinking it's really limitless because of the talent, your talent and their talent. and it can just
and you
go,
let them have their talent. You
oh yeah.
You know, you like it would be a sin to have. I mean, a lot of times I go in. We have a joke. Everyone is a string arranger. Everyone plays strings. Not really. You know, you get somebody who, you know, thinks, oh well, you know, I'm going to bring in someone who can play these string parts, but I'm going to write all the parts. It's like, well, okay, do it. Knock yourself out. And sometimes they're great, but sometimes they're not. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, why don't you just let me do what I do, you know? But, you know, everybody's a producer too, right?
Well, I was going to ask about that because when, you know, one thing I was thinking about when you have all of the talent that you had, you know, and you had your vision, right? So this is, you know what you want, but you're also, like you said, you're not going to just say, okay, everybody in their little lanes, this is where you're going to be. Because I think one of the most incredible things is when, you know, like, I guess it would be teamwork, when you feel and hear all these different musicians bringing out what they do best. And then it just makes your song and your vision and what you wanted. Does it ever feel like, wow, I wanted it to go this direction? You know, when you're putting the record together and you're in the studio and then it starts going a little different direction. Is that a good feeling or a bad feeling? Do you think,
because we didn't have with some of these songs, this was also very different because in the past on the previous albums, I would go out and perform songs and, you know, you almost worked them out live before you went in the studio. And what was different in this particular album was that we didn't do that. You know, now we're having to work out the live versions because we did it the other way around. We recorded it first. And that's very different. That's especially coming from a kind of more of a pop world and a, you know, a singer-songwriter pop world. You know, a lot of times it's best to kind of learn how to sing, you know, get your voice on each song. But in this particular instance, like that song that you heard first, Bright Shiny Objects, that one did not really have I think it kind of has almost like a little bit of a disco feel, and that came about because Sean Pelton and Will Lee were the rhythm section. You know, it's like, you know, you can't get any better than that. And those guys started playing it, and they just started grooving on it, and it was like, I'm not going to say, no, that's not great. It was great. You know, it fit the song. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
That's not where I started with it, but I'm ecstatic, you know. So, yeah I can't say that there was – and also Paul, my producer, he, you know, he's very opinionated. He's a Welsh guy with, you know, with very strong opinions, and he and I have worked together for years, and we have this joke that we always say – I always say to him, no, 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 okay.
Yeah, nice shot. Yeah.
He said, why don't you just say okay, because you're about to give in anyway, because, you know, it's just my nature just to say no to him anyway, because it's what I do, you know. No, 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 okay, I'll do it, you know. And then I end up doing it. It was his idea to do Frankenstein, and I said, I cannot do this. No, I'm not going to do it. No, I am truly not going to do Frankenstein. What are you thinking? I'm not going to do Frankenstein. And then I did Frankenstein, and you know, it's great.
Well,
and the whole time we were trying to figure it out, I'm going, I hate you, I hate this song, I hate. Okay, that's great. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah, that's. I love that. I think that's one of the coolest things in life is where, you know, you kind of have your sights on something, and you're kind of thinking, okay, this is where we're going to go. I can see, you know, the island and the shore. This is where we're going, and then all of a sudden you're somewhere different, and you think, this is pretty cool because when you're bringing in all this. People, you know, that are talented, like you were talking about, amazing people and the producers and people like that. I've never witnessed anything like that. I would love to see that someday, how that all works together and how all the talent.
Well, you're
all
invited. Next time we go, we do this. Next record. You can come on.
I would love to just be the little fly on the wall watching. That would just be, that would be awesome. But I think one thing we'll do, we'll take a music break, and I think we'll play Light This Candle. And then we want to talk about I got a lot of questions to ask you, but I want to talk about, you know, how that you take a song that, you know, you create, and it's, you know, in one medium, and then you go into the video realm or create something visual out of it and how that kind of works. Because to me, that's pretty incredible. I don't know how that would work, because to me, it's just two different worlds. How do you take a song?
We've just finished working on, and we're just doing the final touches on Light This Candle, the video for that. So I've spent a lot of time listening to this one in the past couple of weeks.
Well, when we come back, Denny, we'll talk about that, because I think a lot of people, one of the things I love to do when I get someone like you, someone so talented, and I'm just so happy to have you on the show, is to talk how that, you know, folks listen to a song, they hear a song, they see a video, they go, you know, with we're all a member of the short attention span theater now. So we jump from one thing to another, we go to another artist, we go to another video. But I think people have to slow down, and I think they have to take a look at what really happens and how much work and incredible, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that goes into this, because, you know, it's not easy, and it's by any means. And I don't know if people really understand and appreciate all the things that go into, you know, an incredible album or one performance. You know, I just want that's what I want to do, is just have people kind of slow down, take a listen, have, like you talk about that, say, okay, this is what we do, this is how it works. This whole thing started because I started the show in 2008, but the reason I started doing it, Denny, was I was listening to, I think it was a King Biscuit Hour or whatever that was, a long time ago, and there was a the guy was interviewing Meatloaf. And I was never a big fan of Meatloaf. And I liked his music. I thought it was good. You know, it's good music. I liked it. But I really didn't know much about him or anything behind the music. And when I heard the interview, I was walking the dog one night, and I had it on. And my goodness, it was like a light went on. It was like I appreciated his music so much more after that interview, because I knew what he went through and what his life was like and what he did to get to where he was and what his songs meant and what, you know, it wasn't like, oh yeah, I like him, I don't like him, you're better than him. It was kind of like, okay, appreciate this picture or this piece of art, and then I'll go over here and appreciate this one. They're not the same. They're different. You know, then that's how I look at music. And I want people to understand that. I don't know if that makes any sense, but just don't, just don't be in a big rush, music listeners. Take a breath, listen to the song, and we'll come back and Denny will talk about how this is translating into video. So we'll be right back after this. You're listening to John Talk Radio, and this is Light the Candle, Denny Bonet, and we'll be right back. I want to welcome you back to John Talk Radio. And this is July the 8th, 2017. My special guest tonight is Denny Bonet. You can go on her website, denibonet.com. Her latest album is Bright Shiny Objects, which we've heard two songs from. And that's a really cool song, Denny. That's just like, wow, that's got a lot of energy in it. And it's just really cool.
Well, that
cool.
was actually the first, that was the very first song that I wrote on this project. And you went right for it. That one I co-wrote that with Steve Gabori, a friend of mine who I worked with. He was kind of Cyndi Lauper's MD, musical director and piano player, keyboard guy for many, many years. And when I thought about who was I going to call to start this thing, I thought, well, this makes sense. He's got a studio. He's an amazing artist, and he'll kick me in the butt because I've worked with him, you know, before on other things, you know, on other projects, and I knew that, you know, he's a great writer. I think he actually did a little bit of the writing on Kinky Boots also with Cyndi on Broadway, and so it's got a little bit more of a cinematic feel to it, but you know, I didn't have any preconceptions, and on each track on this record, I had no preconceptions about where I wanted to, you know, where I wanted to go with it, you know, which is why it's a very eclectic album. But you know, the that track, we started it on my birthday, you know, a couple of years back, and you know, it sort of sat for a while, and I'd go back, I'd work on it, and then it sits for a while, and then we finished it on my birthday, like the following year. So, thus the light this candle, and then it also had the double meaning of, who was the astronaut who said, you know, now let's light this candle or whatever, you know.
I don't know. That doesn't ring a bell.
I should have the story down, but I don't, because I know I associate it with the birthday cake. So, you know, but it is. It's a true story. There's an astronaut that says, "Let's light this candle," and, you know, whatever. But anyway, but the video for this one, I have to say, the other videos that I've done for this album, which the first one was Bright Shiny Objects, the first song you played. And that one, I kind of had a concept, and that was that I just wanted to do a video that would show people dancing to music, and the concept being, you know, kind of, I hate to sound like a peacenik, but, you know, we're living in crazy times, and I kind of felt like I wanted to show people from all races and walks of life and everything else dancing to that song. And that was the unifying factor, you know, just to show that, you know, I really felt like, you know, that when we released that, you know, we were all dealing with our current situation and, you know, what was about to happen. And, you know, that particular song and that particular video was just all about, like, can we all just kind of feel good for a few minutes and watch this, because we were all feeling pretty crappy. So that's kind of where that one came from. And I had the concept that I would get, you know, people that I knew to dance to it, and then I actually went on Fiverr.com and got some people to dance in wacky costumes for $5 or $10, whatever I had to pay them.
Oh, that's wild.
You know, I got one guy, I think he was in Russia, and he's got a great look. He's got kind of this kind of he looks like the little kid who stuck his finger in the dike, you know. his hair is cut square, and he cracks me up. I just love him to death, and he danced the whole song for me, you know. And then I have some guy kind of, you know, in a native safari looking outfit dancing to it, you know. But then, you know, we went a little crazy, and we got all kinds of dancing people to be in it. But this one, Light This Candle, I guess in a way you could say I was very well influenced by having spent the past month being out of the country.
Yep.
And traveling so much. So there you go. I was inspired. There we go.
There. We got it. Yeah.
I was inspired.
Geography.
Geography. It was geography, John. It was definitely geography.
I knew it was.
I knew it was very geography-like. Because one thing I can say is that, like, a lot of the new friends that I met in Belgium really love New York. I met this one woman who, you know, she's a New Yorkophile. She loves the city, you know, absolutely loves this place. And so I decided I am going to do an iconic New York video with this song. And it's what we were trying to do is not to do your standard travelogue, you know, okay, here's the Statue of Liberty, here's this, here's that. But I actually recorded in a bunch of different places. There is I live way uptown, and in our subway station up here, there's this weird upper platform. It's so strange, and I've always looked at it thinking, God, this would be a great place to shoot a video, because it's sort of above the middle, right above the track. So, you know, if you get off the train and you don't want to walk alongside the train, you can walk up the steps and walk on this platform. And so the video kind of we shot there. We shot in Times Square. And, you know, I just stood in the middle of Times Square and jumped up on this platform and played, you know. But we did it in the afternoon, so there's not like a gazillion people, but there's the people in the strange – in Times Square you have the people in character costumes, you know, like, you know, dressed up like Minnie Mouse and whatnot. So we get some of those, whatever.
Well, that's good, yeah.
Yeah, and we went downtown. We went down to the Village. We went to Washington Square Park. I played – we actually didn't use it. I actually played – sitting at a counter at a diner, and we ended up not using that footage, but it's really it's glorious, it's wonderful. And I'm friends with this girl named Anana Kay, and you should check her music out too. She's wonderful. She is so talented, so talented. Anana Kaye, and you know, she's a gem. I mean, I adore her. And she's done my last three videos on top of being a great singer-songwriter and the most creative person I know right now. She, myself and Paul got together and, you know, we have these concepts and she executes it. So it's just great. It's wonderful. And they shot it too. They did all the shooting, she and her husband, Irakli Gabriel. So they're great. And it's going to come out. I'm not sure when we're going to release it. Because I don't know if it's great to release a new video right in the middle of summer when everybody's away, but we'll probably release it right before I go out on tour. You know, that's probably what's going to happen. So, but I did put up a little snippet. If you go over to my Facebook page and Twitter, there's a little blurb up there.
Okay.
I put like a little teaser up there. So.
That's good. One thing I wanted to talk about, we've got just about 10 minutes left, and I just want to say thank you so much, because I could talk to you forever, and I just, you know, there's so many things we could talk about, so I really appreciate
it.
Well,
we'll have
to
have a repeat performance, because I could talk forever, no problem.
Oh,
no, you're very easy to talk to, John, and I appreciate it. I really do.
Well, thank you. And one thing you touched on that I've asked this question recently to all these different musicians I've talked to, and young starting out musicians, which didn't exactly know how to react to it. And the ones that have more been around a little bit more and have seen things or kind of get it. But the responsibility, I want to talk to you just for a short period of time about the artist's responsibility, the responsibility right now. I mean, you talked a little bit about the way that, you know, life is right now, the United States is right now, how things are. And there's a lot of people that are not, excuse me, that aren't doing what I think they need to be doing. And whether it's political, and it probably is political, but there are people that I think can pick up the slack on a lot of that and push a lot of the messages that need to be out there. And I think that is the artist. What do you think the I asked this question of a young band. These guys were just, you know, in their 20s, and they were like, oh, okay, they're just out of college and they're just having fun. But I wanted to know what they thought about what is the responsibility of an artist today, and what is the responsibility, you know, do you feel that? Do you feel like, okay, maybe some years back it wouldn't have been so any kind of pressure on people to get messages out or to get people to understand about things, about tolerance and love and peace and things of that nature that were kind of out there. But I think right now that message needs to be out there more than ever. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. I think it's a really, really, really good point and a really good, good thing to bring up. I found it very interesting to be out of the country, and I kind of felt like I was representing, you know, because when you travel from here, you know, you don't want to be an ugly American. You want to be somebody who, you know, will make people proud, you know, but not so much proud to be American, but proud that whatever you believe, you know, or whatever you believe in, you know, you can go away from the country and show them that we're not all like that, you know, that
exactly.
That, you know, I didn't go that way. You know, I also stay away from politics in social media. And I'll tell you why I stay away from politics.
Yeah, so do I.
You know,
I
mean, I really do, because I find it, I just stay, when somebody is writing stuff like, you know, on Facebook or, you know, on Twitter or something, that I just sit there and go, are you kidding me? Seriously? You know, I'm not going to comment to them and say, okay, well, you've got to think, you know, I tend to just go, okay, I'm going to show you by my actions that you are not right by that, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I find it – I'm not trying to skirt the issue here, but I do feel that, you know, I only got into one kind of political conversation when I was in England, you know, on that whole tour. And I finally just had to put my foot down and say – we don't all think like that.
Yeah.
You know, come on, don't be stupid, you know?
Right.
You know, that's what makes this world go round. But I also feel like there's two things. You can't spend all your time preaching to the converted. You can't spend all your time just, you know, saying, okay, I'm only going to surround myself with people who think like I do. But on the other hand, you know, you can't – I don't think the problem that we've got right now, I think, in this country is that we're so divided with the way we think. And I honestly don't think that by me going on and on with my beliefs to somebody who really doesn't believe it is going to make a difference. But on the other hand, I do think that the thing that's going to be that keeps us all together is music and love.
Yes. Yeah.
And the power
exactly.
of music. And I think that we have to seriously make sure that this present administration doesn't take that away from our kids. And we have to make sure that if there is any way, you know, I mean, I cringe when I hear about people saying that they're going to do away with public television and public radio and the arts. And that
right.
is just, it makes me cry. I can't stand it. I think it's horrible. And, you know, why people would think that our country can live without the arts, but we have to take that money from the arts and give it just to the military. You know, love is stronger than hate. I believe that with all my heart. And I just believe that we have to make sure that that doesn't happen. You know, it just can't happen. We can't let it happen. And that's where I, you know, that's where I can put my energy into making sure that they don't do away with that thing that I believe so strongly in, which is the arts.
Now that's a perfect answer, because that's exactly what I think right now. It's like the vessel or the missile or the thing that we have to use is music. And it can penetrate, and it can get to people, and it can get, you know, it's like people love music, so they're listening to it, and they're dancing, and they're feeling great about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's this message, and it's like, oh, okay. And I think maybe they're not going to listen to reason or somebody just talking to them. But, you know, I think that the arts is something that we just got to push right now. And,
well, I
and
went
Denny,
to see U2 last week, and you know, you talk about somebody
that?
Who, you know, oh my gosh, well, you know, I'm a big fan, so it was great. I didn't know I was going, and someone, you know, invited me last minute, and, you know, and great seats, and this is the second time I've seen them, but it was interesting to be at a concert with, you know, I was wondering how many people in that audience, you know, did not feel the same way as Bono, who I admire because he talks the talk, you know, but he talks it strong, you know. I mean,
yeah.
he really.
He's a good man.
It was a great show. It was a great, great show. It was, you know.
I would love to see that. I haven't seen him play, but I would love to do that. I just really appreciate you being on. We're running out of time. I thank you so much, Denny, for being on.
Give us another hour. We can keep going.
Well, I definitely can schedule another hour. It's just been awesome talking to you. Denny's website is denibonet.com. And go out and pick up Bright Shiny Objects. It's an amazing album. And thank you so much, Denny. Anything you'd like to say in closing?
The shameless self-promotion. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that gobbledygook because I try to put up really fun stuff. So, you know, I only keep it to the fun stuff.
That's what I do. We have a puppy named Cat Stevens, and he's gotten so much. I mean, it's the funniest thing in the world that we just my grandson came up with the name, and we just went with it. And he's such an awesome little puppy. He actually walked in the room here just a minute ago.
Did mine, and we'll have to introduce him to mine because mine's name is Gidget. I have little Gidget. Gidget and Cat Stevens could have a little play date.
Yeah. Well, I think Cat's going to have to go to discipline school here pretty soon, but I think he'll be fine. He'll be good. But thank you so much, Denny, and I just wish the best for you, and we'll definitely have
thank
to have a
you.
Part two.
And thank you so much.
I want to thank everyone for supporting independent musicians, for supporting Independent Showcase, for going on into our end of our ninth year and into our 10th year, and we're going to keep going. And thank you so much, Denny. Have a great evening, and we'll talk to everybody later.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too.